So what I've passed out is, I suppose, basically a map of the territory for the next few weeks. And because there's quite a lot of I'm going to give an overview this morning, and because there's quite a lot of information, I thought quite good to have a bit of a visual aid you can take away. So Amara Pushpa was talking about air, the element air, and you know, when we're breathing air in and out, it feels quite soft and gentle. But air can become incredibly powerful. Who remembers the hurricane of 1987? Yes. Yes, so, you know, suddenly air can just rip up trees and blow off roofs. I was just remembering that when I lived out in Spain, you could hear in the mountains, you could hear the wind coming from miles away. You could hear this kind of distant roaring for a while, and then the roaring getting louder and louder and louder, and suddenly it was just as if you could see it, it would be like a great dragon roaring up the valley, you know, huge kind of wind that you get in the mountains. So this series, it's on the what's called the eight worldly winds, and the imagery of wind, I think, is well chosen. I can't remember actually exactly where it comes from, at the moment, but I'll look it up. So the eight worldly winds are eight pairs of opposites. One half of the pair is pleasant, one is unpleasant, but they kind of come together, and I suppose they're seen as, winds, because winds both can be very powerful. They can blow you around, and it can feel as if you're a bit helpless in the wind. Or sometimes, if a wind is blowing by the seaside, we all know how trees grow in a sort of somewhat distorted way. If a wind's kind of constantly blowing from one direction, it tends to, make the plants and trees grow that way. So if there's a particular wind in our lives that always comes from a particular quarter, maybe it kind of affects us, we grow in that direction. But when I was thinking about these worldly winds some years ago, it just occurred to me that there's four pairs of opposites, there's four directions of the compass, and there are four Buddhas at each of these directions of the compass, as well as one in the centre. And it just sort of, I started thinking, making associations and realising that actually they work together quite well. It's as if a particular wind has a particular antidote in a particular Buddha. And this is just my own association. You won't find it anywhere if you try to Google it. But I think it works. And I think it's helpful to bring in not only the worldly winds, but some kind of archetypal figure that helps us in actually, standing firm with them, or the antidote to them, or whatever. So that's the territory we're going to cover today. Also, just to recommend this book, which you can buy in the bookshop, and it is a mere £5.99. It's very cheap. And it's written by Vajragupta, who is going to, I think probably many of you remember that he visited us 2 years ago, and he's coming again for a few weeks. So that's really great. He's a lovely guy. It'd be great to have him around again. So please do purchase the book as a sort of, background to the next few weeks. So one of the thoughts that came up for me in thinking about the worldly winds is, the strongest wind, maybe a hurricane or a cyclone, blows in a circle, blows round and round and round and round. And then there's this strange phenomenon with a hurricane that at the very centre, it's quiet, You pass through one side of the storm, and then you're in the centre, you're in the eye of the storm, if you like, and then you pass through the other, if you ever experience a hurricane. And so you could kind of imagine that at the centre of these winds, you could imagine maybe each Buddha kind of sitting at the centre, at the still centre of these winds. That's the sort of image I'd like to kind of conjure up for you. And I'd like to start the sort of gateway to the mandala of the five Buddhas. The first of the five Buddhas is the Buddha of the East, the Blue Buddha at Kshobhya. And also the first of the worldly winds, the pairs that's usually mentioned, is the one of praise and blame. Praise and blame. So, you know, whether we're being praised, which feels very pleasant to some of us, maybe not all, whether we're being blamed. So the east wind is a very cold wind, it's a biting wind, it sort of penetrates to the bone, and that feeling of being blamed is quite, and it's somehow a very hard one to feel equanimous with. It's quite funny, when you start thinking along these lines, the sort of imagination throws up all sorts of interesting associations. I don't know if any of you know the book Bleak House?
Yes.
And John Jarndyce, who's a really benevolent character, and people around him don't necessarily always behave very well. Whenever he feels himself starting to get a bit cross with somebody, he says, "Oh, the wind's in the east." You know, he'll blame it on the wind rather than the person. He doesn't want to blame the person, so it's the wind. So it's just quite interesting. So in this area of praise and blame, what's happening is that we're looking outside ourselves for validation. We're looking to the external world to build a sense of self. And obviously, it's natural that praise, you know, especially if it's accurate, causes us to feel good. That's just natural. And it's natural that, feeling misunderstood or wrongly accused or something like that inevitably makes us feel, you know, it's a painful experience. You can't, in a way, get away from the fact that these experiences are painful. But what's difficult is if we start to base, you know, our actual self-worth on, you know, what we're getting back from other people, whether we're, you know, being praised or blamed. And the Buddha that sits in the middle of this particular sort of cyclone, I would say, is Akshobhya, the Blue Buddha, the imperturbable. He's called the imperturbable. And his wisdom is the mirror-like wisdom. It's the wisdom that just kind of looks at things. Is that the case? Is that so? There's that story of that Hakuin, the teacher, who was wrongly accused of fathering a child, and he just said, "Is that so?" And when later on the person who had accused him came back and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I lied," he said, "Oh, is that so?" You know. So it's that sort of quality Akshobhya has of just, is that so? Is that true? You know, which is somehow bigger than the praise or blame. I think that Akshobhya has a quality of sort of vastness about him. He's that deep blue of the midnight sky, and you look up at the sky and it's vast and full of stars. In which our own kind of, how we're feeling about ourselves, you know, by exposing ourselves to that sort of bigger mind, it's helpful. It takes us out of that kind of area of, you know, just feeling, yeah, limited by self-concern in that way. So, moving round, we move round to the south, to the southern quarter, and the wind from the south, the wind which is quite a soft wind, a gentle wind. There's that poem, I think, of John Masefield, where he talks about the riches coming from the south, you know, the sort of trade wind, I suppose you could see it, the trade that brings riches and gold and jewels and precious stones and spices and all of that from the south. Yeah, okay. Oh yeah, I wrote it down. Rowing home to palace, to haven in sunny Palestine, with a cargo of ivory, apes and peacocks, sandalwood, cedarwood, and sweet white wine. One of those poems you learn at school. Yeah. So this is the wind of gain and loss, the wind of riches and poverty, luxury and destitution. So I remember when I wrote this talk, first of all, it was way back in 1997, and at that time my income had just dropped by about a third of the previous level for reasons, and I never thought up until then I was particularly extravagant, but I seemed to manage on a figure that was would have seemed impossible beforehand. So this is the wind that kind of brings us to that incredibly basic feeling of security about our life depends on our resources, on our means, you know, and to feel poverty and destitution is a very, really, you know, frightening, scary prospect. I was recently reading, I don't want to get into the politics of this book, but I was very interested in reading this book recently about, it's called Utopia for Realists, and it's about the idea of a universal basic income. One of the points that was made in this book is how poverty just distorts human spirit. You know, it's impossible, really, if you're just struggling for survival, to see beyond, you know, the next day's food or shelter. You know, the opposite of that is, of course, riches, which some people have in huge abundance. You know, the immense contrast. I think there's an immense contrast in our society at the moment between rich and poor, and getting bigger. So this is quite an issue for us. The whole area of economics is a huge. You know, I can only brush the surface of it, but I think it's important to realise that this is something we just have to deal with in our lives and find a way around. And I think, you know, it's very important that, for example, our work with Dalit people who used to belong to the untouchable class in India is very much to do with lifting them out of poverty so that they have the freedom, the leisure, the means to practice a Dharma life. And I'm sure there's much more we could be looking at in this country. But of course, we can start by giving food to the food bank and donations to Hidden Gems and our time as well. We can give. So Ratnasambhava, the golden Buddha of richness and beauty, sits in the gesture of supreme giving. So at the centre of this, you know, raging storm of property and wealth and money and poverty, is this Buddha whose basic attitude is that of dana, of generosity and of giving. So what he's teaching is that the way forward is the freeing up and loosening up of our feeling of attachment to property. And that may be physical property, it also may be our time, it may be our energy, whatever it is we have to give. Ratnasambhava tells us that the way, you know, to kind of, I suppose, be at the centre of this worldly wind is to experience this quality of generosity in our lives, and appreciation and beauty. So again, moving round the circle, we come to the west, and the warm west wind, full of birds' cries. I never hear the west wind, but tears are in my eyes. Another poem. So this is the west wind, is in a way the prevailing wind in our island. It's the one that we have the most of. Most weather comes from the west. It's a warm wind and it's also a rainy wind. It's a very changeable wind. It buffets us, I suppose. So you could see this as the wind of pleasure and pain. That kind of basic duality in life. Life has pleasure and life has pain. And the wind of changeability and feelings that come and go in gusts, tears and laughter, sunshine and showers. So, yeah, in Know Your Mind, Sangharakshita has a few interesting things to say about the way that pleasure and pain are just inextricably linked to one another. So pleasure is that what we want to repeat, pain that which we want to avoid. But if we examine the experience closely, we wanting to get the hold of the pleasure starts to undermine the pleasure. So the more we grasp hold of pleasure, the more actually what we're grasping is painful. So of course it's not that there's anything wrong with pleasure. I hope you know we know that. I hope we know there's nothing wrong with pleasure. But the problem is we seek it by routes that don't ultimately give us pleasure. You know, I suppose the Buddhist teaching is that pleasure is a byproduct. It's a byproduct of something else. It's a byproduct of living a different kind of life. And if we think, what is it the byproduct of? And we turn our gaze onto Amitabha, the red Buddha of the West, who's very easy to gaze upon. You know, he has got that quality of the setting sun over the sea when the bright light of the sun is fading. And what he's radiating is metta. So at the centre of this kind of whirling wind of pleasure and pain sits Amitabha, the embodiment of love and metta and compassion. So, and we come round now to the north wind. This is a very interesting, I find this one very interesting, the associations with the pair of, it's fame and infamy, and Amoga City. Fame and infamy. So I connect that a lot with success and failure as well. Fame, success brings fame, or it can bring fame, or being well thought of, well talked of. Failure is the opposite. You know, the experience of failure, you know, is usually quite a public experience and quite a humiliating experience. And it's horribly painful. It's praise and blame, but writ large, really, isn't it? And possibly more to do with how we act, how we behave, you know, what we're doing in the world that brings us the success that we like, the fame that we like, or brings us the opposite. Well, apparently some people like fame. I can't really imagine why. But it seems to be one of those things that people want. You know, they want to be known, want to be famous. So, yeah, Amoga City is a Buddha who's quite a mysterious Buddha. He's a Buddha of the Northern Quarter, and his wisdom is called the all-accomplishing wisdom. His quality is that of action, of being effective, of having an effect on the world. And this is how I think there's this link between this and the success and the failure. Well, one of the meanings of his name is unobstructed success. This kind of brings up envy. It's one of the green with envy. You know, there's so many associations. Either, you know, we might feel envious of others' success, or others might feel envious of our success. So this whole kind of area of fame and infamy seems, you know, very strongly linked with Amoga City. And his gesture is a gesture of fearlessness. So this is the gesture that doesn't mind about the whole fame and infamy thing, doesn't mind about success and failure. It's a gesture of supreme confidence, I suppose. So, at the centre of all this is the Buddha Vairochana, and he doesn't have a worldly wind because he is at the centre. You know, he's at the centre of all the others. His name means the illuminator, and his wisdom is the wisdom of the whole field of reality, the Dharma Dhatu, it's called. Nothing is unseen or unknown by this wisdom. And so I think that basically what he stands for at the centre of the mandala is that of complete awareness, complete mindfulness, complete knowledge and understanding of what's going on in the other quarters. So he's his colour is white, which kind of contains all the other colours of the rainbow as well. So there he is at the middle. Okay, so those are the four pairs of worldly winds, the eight worldly winds, the four directions of the Buddhas, the five Buddhas. Just a quick overview of them. And what I'd like to do with this now is just spend a little bit of time in reflection. Okay. So you could be sitting comfortably. So in this reflection, what I suggest we do is we bring to mind, one after the other, I'll remind us of them, these four points of the compass, and Vairochana at the centre. And we may find that one particular aspect calls to us more or is more relevant to us at the moment or has a particular impact on us at the moment. We may not, but just being open to that. It might be that one particular pair of worldly winds has a sort of a recognisable, you know, aha, yeah. Or we feel particularly drawn to one of the Buddhas. We just begin in the east. The quality, praise and blame. And along with that, the imperturbable Buddha, Akshobhya, the mirror-like wisdom. Blue in colour, touching the earth with one hand. now we move on to the self, to these qualities of gain and loss, riches and poverty. Center of it, the golden yellow Buddha, Ratnasambhava, the jewel born. His hand outstretched in the gesture of giving. And then moving on to the west, to the winds of pleasure and pain, ups and downs of life. Glowing red Buddha, Amitabha. Embodiment of love and compassion. Seated in deep meditation. And then moving to the deep, dark green of the north. Worldly winds of fame and success. Or of infamy or unpopularity and failure. Center of this wind, deep green Buddha, Amoghasiddhi, qualities of action, effectiveness, fearlessness, his hand raised in the gesture of fearlessness and supreme confidence. And at the center sits Vairochana, bright, white illuminator, awareness and mindfulness. We just reflect on what came into our minds most vividly. Where did we connect? What colour? What Buddha? What worldly winds? Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom.
Keep going a bit more.
Om Vajrakshobhyahom. Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom, Om Vajrakshobhyahom. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang.
Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang. Om Ratna Sambhava Trang.
Om Mami Deva Hri.
Om Mami Deva Hri. Om Mami Deva Hri. Om Mami Deva Hri. Om Mami Deva Hri.
Siddhi Ahum.
Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum. Om Amoga Siddhi Ahum.
Om Varochana Hum.
Om Varochana Hum. Om Varochana Hum. Om Varochana Hum. Om Varochana Hum.
So over the next weeks, we'll be going into these qualities and Buddhas in more detail, sort of one at a time.